Okay, well, thank you very much for inviting me to be here. I'm going to try to get through this as quickly as possible. There are several new things. That's why the anything new part comes up. But the main issue that we always talk about in GI is, of course, colonoscopies. I'm going to briefly go through some of those things. I know this is supposed to be case-based. My case is, well, we'll just put this up here. A 53-year-old male presents to the office with a history of greater than 15 years of reflux symptoms. He's been treated with omeprazole but has breakthrough symptoms. He has no family history of colon cancer. His physical exam is unremarkable. And I say, what might you recommend? Well, I'm not going to talk about reflux. Somebody else can talk. Dr. Speckle can talk about that. But the reason I put this up is because as gastroenterologists, we should all be thinking, I mean, primary care practitioners should be thinking about screening colonoscopies, and this person certainly is a candidate for screening. So after you take care of the reflux issues, I would expect that we would, all of us would recommend screening. So why do we talk about this? Well, this is the data on colon cancer in 2014, the expected number of cases, and you can see about 135,000 new colorectal cancer diagnoses, and there will be about 50,000 colorectal cancer deaths. And if you look at the risk for men and women, women are a little bit lower than men, but it is about 5% now. That's down a little bit. It used to be, when I gave this talk 10, 15 years ago, we would say about 6%. So there is some change, and you'll see why. It's the third leading cause, if you lump men and, both men and women together, it's the third leading cause of cancer death. This slide is busy, and many of mine are, but I just want to highlight two things. One is that it's, they're all about even in terms of incidence, men and women. You can see women a little lower. The main point is that in African-American men and women, there's a slightly higher risk for colon cancer in that group compared to the rest of the ethnicities. So we talk about screening, and screening is designed to our purpose is to both detect early cancers earlier and reduce cancer mortality, as well as potentially to prevent cancers by finding adenomas and removing them. So what is an ideal screening study? Well, number one, you have to have a prevalent disease. The test has to be effective, meaning that it has an actionable outcome, and hopefully you will improve at the end of screening, you will improve the situation compared to where you start. It should have a high sensitivity and specificity. It should be safe, available, convenient, and most of all, it should be cheap. And those are the ideal characteristics of a screening study. So in colorectal cancer, there are a number of different guidelines that have been set up by various groups. This is the Preventive Services Task Force. And again, this is from 2008. They are reevaluating part of this, I believe, as we speak. But their main guidelines say that one should begin screening for colorectal cancer at age 50. And it can be done with a number of different studies. The fecal occult blood test, remember this is in 2008. Sigmoidoscopy, colonoscopy. At that time, they did not endorse either stool DNA, which we will talk about, or CT colonography. There was not sufficient evidence, they felt. And for that reason, Medicare at that time decided they would not pay for CT colonographies for screening. When patients get to be 75 to 85, they recommended that the decision for screening should be based on individual considerations, health, and so on. And then they recommended against screening on patients older than 85. This is the one that we mostly follow, which is the American Cancer Society, the U.S. Multi-Society Task Force, basically all the GI societies, and the American College of Radiology. And again, this came out in 2008. They divided this up into two groups. One was tests that both detected and prevented cancer. So they could detect cancer well, but they could prevent cancer by finding adenomatous polyps. And again, the same studies are noted. You have flexible sigmoidoscopies, colonoscopies. They mentioned double contrast barium enemas, although that has really fallen by the wayside. And then CT colonography, they included in their recommendations as being a modality for screening. Then they also mentioned that there were several tests that would primarily detect cancer and not polyps. And again, annual, this is the GWIAC, the GWIAC FOBT, the Hemocult test. And they recommended the Hemocult Sensa, which is a higher sensitivity than the Hemocult 2. They also recommended the fecal immunochemical test, which is I will talk about. And they included in there, although it had not been approved at that time, they included stool DNA, which, again, I will talk about. The American College of Gastroenterology, also about that time in 2009, published their guidelines. They are a little more inclusive, but they talk about beginning at age 50, although in African-American men, going back to that slide that I showed you before, they suggested starting at age 45. They are the only society so far that has really recommended beginning at age 45 in that group, and that's a little bit controversial. They recommended a colonoscopy every 10 years with alternatives. They definitely felt this was the strongest, the data was strongest for that, but alternatives were sigmoidoscopy and CT colonography. And then the family history, if you have a family history, they put in their guidelines. And for those declining those tests, so they clearly put these down below those tests. They talked about the fecal immunochemical test on an annual basis, and alternatives were the Hemocult Sensa and, again, fecal DNA, the stool DNA. But this was back in 2009, and so things have changed since then. So in the 1980s and 90s, when we really started talking about, I've been around long enough to see this whole pathway develop. We were doing mostly GWIAC fecal occult blood tests and sigmoidoscopy. But since 2000, and in the late 90s, 2000, most cancer screening in the United States has been colonoscopy. That's not true around the world. And I think the number that I read was that 97% of screening in the United States now, since 2007, or 95%, is colonoscopy. So we really don't do many of the other endoscopic studies. There have been no published randomized controlled trials of colonoscopy. I believe there is a large one that is out there looking at it. The VA did have a study, but I don't believe it was randomized, if I remember correctly. The question has been, is colonoscopy effective? Has it been effective? So since there's no studies that have looked at it directly, this is data from the American Cancer Society in which they looked at both incidence and mortality of cancer based on years. So beginning around 1980 or 1990, you can see that the incidence, this is male, this is female, sort of peaked there, and then it started to have a fairly significant drop in the rate of cancers. And if you look at mortality, there's a parallel, although not quite as dramatic, decrease in the mortality of colorectal cancer. In the early, when was it? I think it was the early 1990s. The National Polyp Study was done, in which they did a 7-year study looking at patients who had adenomas and looking at their outcome. And they showed that if you had, among other things, but if you had an adenoma removed by colonoscopy, your risk of developing colon cancer decreased. They didn't have a control group, so they compared it to some historical controls, and their data at that time suggested anywhere from a 70% to 90% reduction in the number of colon cancers in that 7-year period. There was a lot of controversy about that, but they've since continue to follow these patients out. And you can see that now, this was published in 2012, that now they've gone out to nearly 20 years. And you can see that the number, this is mortality, remember, colon cancer mortality. And they've dropped the number of cancer deaths compared to a SEER, again, not a direct control group. It wasn't randomized controls trial. But they showed that there was about a 50% reduction in the number of expected cancers if you had an adenoma removed. They also followed some of the patients who did not have adenomas, and you can see the risk for colon cancer death was very low in that group. So if you didn't have adenomas, you did quite well. And finally, this is a study that was an interesting study I found that was published this year. This group looked at, again, SEER data, looking at colorectal cancer incidence, which are the three colored lines here. And this was based on the health survey studies looking at the use of screening. This is out of the NIH, and the screening. You can see that screening increased beginning in, again, 85, and it's increased up here to somewhere between 60 and 70% of patients in 2010. had undergone screening based on that study. And you can see that there's a good inverse correlation between the incidence of colorectal cancer in both, this is looking at early stage and late stage, and late stage is greater than early stage in this group, but it seems to have an inverse correlation with colon cancer screening. And they looked at all these numbers, and just to summarize their paper, they showed that over these three decades, and again, they looked at SEER data over all these three decades, that there was a fairly significant reduction in the number of expected. So the dashed line here is the number of expected cancers at both early stage and late stage. And you can see that over these three decades, they felt that there was somewhere between 236 and 550,000 cancers that were prevented by colonoscopy. So pretty significant number. Now again, this is looking at two different data sets and saying there's a correlation here. So you don't know for certain whether this was the colonoscopy that did it all, or the screening. I shouldn't say colonoscopy, although later in this later portion here, this is primarily colonoscopy. But it certainly correlates well with surveillance. So why don't we just say everybody gets colonoscopies, and which is what we sort of advocate as gastroenterologists, right? What's wrong with colonoscopy as a screening study? Well, part of it is this going back to what the ideal screening test would be. Certainly, it is a prevalent disease. It's effective. I think the data that I just showed you shows that it's effective in changing the endpoint after screening. High sensitivity and specificity, I didn't show the data, but I will show you a slide later on. It's pretty safe. There are risks to it, perforations, bleeding, and other complications. I would say that it is available, although there are areas in the United States where the availability is certainly less, but overall in the United States it's available. Convenient, it depends on whether you're the patient or the physician, but it's relatively convenient if you can go through the prep and so on. Certainly now the sedation is better. The biggest problem is the last one, and it's not cheap. And so there's a lot of stuff in terms of utilization of colonoscopy because of the cost to the healthcare delivery systems around the country. Additionally, this is screening rates. This is, I think, in 2010, but in any case, if you look at just endoscopy, it's somewhere around 55% utilization. It may be up to 65% nationally now, but certainly we're not getting everybody who should be screened. There are a couple of other issues about effectiveness of colonoscopy. There's a lot of data that shows that you can reduce the number of cancers in the left colon much more than you can in the right. That may be because of biological differences, but there may be also technical differences. Certainly, among people who perform colonoscopy, there has been a big push in terms of quality, things that are measured here, which are really gross quality measures, not fine, but we're using a sort of surrogate, so cecal intubation rates, adenoma detection rates, and so on. The biology, going back to the biology, there may be the cancers that develop in the right colon have a higher proportion of these, a different genetic pathway in terms of development. They often are these very flat polyps. You will see more and more, if you haven't seen it already, these sessile serrated adenomas, which are probably as significant as standard tubular adenomas, but they have a different pathway of development, and they can be much more difficult to detect. And finally, one thing that's very important is the prep. Prep quality is playing a big role, and poor preps tend to occur more often in the right colon than in the left colon. And so prep quality is very important, and as we counsel patients as to preps, one of the big things that have been shown is that a split-dose prep, if you're not recommending those already, is certainly a better prep than the standard take-it-all-at-once kind of a prep. So what other options are there besides colonoscopy if you wanted to try something? Well, there's CT colonography, and again, there's a lot of data on this, and because of time, I can't go through it. But this was a study that was published last year in which they looked at a number of papers and sort of summarized the data on CT colonography. And this is just sensitivity and specificity, and you don't need to look so much at the top two lines, but if you look at, according to size, These are any lesions that are 5 to 7 millimeters, 8 to 10 millimeters, and greater than 10 millimeters. And this comparing CT colonography with colonoscopy. These were papers that looked at both modalities in the same patients. You can see that when you get to large lesions, the numbers are actually very similar between CT colonography and colonoscopy. When you get to smaller lesions, it's certainly less sensitive. And probably less specific as well. And if you look at lesions that are under 5 millimeters, CT colonography is very poor. But the most important piece, I think, is, you know, what about advanced neoplasia and cancer? Since advanced polyps are the ones who have the highest risk for cancer, and obviously you want to find cancers. And you can see here that CT colonography and colonoscopy are basically equivalent to the two. And in fact, these numbers suggest that colonoscopy may have a slightly lower sensitivity. I think that's just study design that may have done that. But nonetheless, they're probably equivalent. So CT colonography looks like a very good option. The advantage is it's rapid. It's about a 20 to 30 minute test once the patient gets in there. There's no sedation. That may actually be a negative to some degree also. Certainly there's lower procedural risk. There's a very small risk for perforation. And then they have the advantage of seeing extracolonic findings. So you'll see reports of CT colonographies where they'll find other things in the colon, in the abdomen. That may be good, that may be bad. It may take you down a pathway of having to look for a lot of different things. But nonetheless, it can be helpful. The disadvantage is the prep is the same. So what everybody hates about the colonoscopy is the prep. You have to have the same prep. They do something they call fecal tagging, where they give oral contrast, and that helps if there's residual stool in there, they can sort of identify it. The mechanism that I'm told that they do is that they put a rectal tube in, and then the patient inflates it up with air or CO2 until the one thing I saw was until they feel discomfort. A lot of people don't like that, but they need to distend the colon. It's important to distend the colon. There's certainly the issue of radiation that you have to consider, especially if you're going to do these every 5 years. Some places use IV contrast, and you could have a contrast allergy. Not everybody does that. And then, of course, as in all these alternative tests, if you find an abnormality, you have to do a colonoscopy. So some patients will get two studies instead of one and two preps instead of one. What about the fecal immunochemical testing? Well, this is a test using an antibody to the human globin protein. The advantage is that it's to human globin, so it doesn't cross-react with dietary meat. So for those who might have done fecal occult blood testing, we used to say for several days to a week before, don't eat any red meats, don't eat foods that are high in peroxidase, and there are a number of foods, to be able to increase both sensitivity and specificity. You don't have to do that with either of these. This measures colonic blood if you bleed from the upper GI tract. With the GWIAC test, it measures blood anywhere in the GI tract. In fact, if you were bleeding from your nose, you could get a positive FOBT. The globin gene is digested in the small bowel, so it measures primarily colonic blood. You only have to do one sample rather than the three that you see with FOBT. And it certainly has an increased sensitivity and specificity compared to FOBT. Now, again, don't pay any attention to this large slide. This is, again, they looked at a number of different studies, and this is the plot showing where they stood in terms of sensitivity and over here specificity. But just to summarize it all, the average was about 68% sensitivity for colon cancer. And actually, that's not colon cancer. I think that's all findings. And this was specificity of 98. So the specificity is very good. There aren't a lot of false positives. The sensitivity is fair. The advantage is it's relatively cheap. Again, the sensitivity and specificity profile is adequate for testing, certainly better than FOBT. When they've done head-to-head comparisons, it's preferable in many of these studies to colonoscopy because they don't have to go through the prep, so there was a higher participation rate. It does not detect polyps very well, and I'll show you one piece of data in just a little bit about that. So it's adequate. And again, if it's positive, it leads to colonoscopy. Stool DNA testing. This has been around for quite some time, and it's gone through a number of different iterations in terms of what genes they look at and so on. What it's looking at is cells turn over, in particular cancer cells turn over, and are shed into the stool. And so they found ways of identifying and amplifying that DNA. And they look for specific markers for colorectal malignancies. So these are the genes that they currently are looking for. So methylated BMP3 and this NDRG4 gene. It's in a methylated in the promoter region, and they do this by PCR. They look for mutant KRAS, they look for actin, and then they also, in this particular study that they, I mean, in this particular test, the way it's configured now, they do a fecal immunochemical test for it. So this is a paper that came out in the New England Journal this year, in which they compared both and this is like 10,000 screening patients that they did colonoscopies on, and they did both a FIT test and they did the DNA test. And just very quickly to walk you through it, what you see is again sensitivity and specificity over here in these nearly 10,000 cases, and you can see that for the stool test, the sensitivity was about 92%, similar to what I had before. Remember, it was 68%. The FIT test was sensitive. The sensitivity was about 73%. If you looked at the early stages, which is stage 1 to 3 cancers, I would say stage 3 really isn't early, but you can see that the numbers are about the same, maybe a little bit better, but probably not very different. This test shows you that neither of these tests is very good at looking at polyps. 42% sensitivity for the DNA test and only 23% for the FIT test. So it's not. This is for detecting cancer, not for preventing cancers. And then if you look at the specificities, the FIT test specificity, again, mirrored that pool study that I showed you, 96%. And the specificity for the DNA test was, in other words, there were more false positives there. But it's not a huge difference. Finally, what I was going to say before that is that 5 days ago, the FDA approved this. It's called Cologuard. So the FDA has approved this test to be used now. And additionally, simultaneously, they have a new program where the FDA approves something and it goes through CMS at the same time, and CMS has approved it. So I don't know when this will happen, but Medicare will pay for this test as well. Just to tell you the logistics of it, that there's a kit, and you have a bowel movement into this collection equipment that they send all part of the kit. You fold the paper over it, you put it in a box, you mail it in to the company, and they do the test on it. So it's not difficult. It's a little bit distasteful at least to some people, but it actually is an effective way of doing it. And then just the last thing that I wanted to present, which is something that I think is on the horizon. Everybody would love to have a blood test that you could say, if you just draw blood and see is there cancer there or not. This is the SEP9 gene. SEP9 is a part of a protein complex that is involved in mitotic cell division. If it's absent, they have abnormal mitoses. It has been shown through a number of studies that colon cancer has increased levels of methylated SEP9 gene found in the blood, and it looked actually pretty good. You can see the initial retrospective and case control studies showed sensitivities that were not that different than at least some of the blood tests in stool, and a fairly high specificity. This trial just again was published this year. This was a prospective trial in a screening population. You can see it's a rather large trial of nearly 8,000 patients. And what they showed, though, was that the numbers actually were probably not as good as they initially were felt on the retrospective studies. So the sensitivity for colorectal cancer was less than 50%, and it varied according to stage. But it was hard to see. Maybe advanced stages. Of course, you don't want to find those. You want to find these up here. And the sensitivity is not really very good. The specificity is quite high. And you can see, again, for advanced adenomas, it's rather poor. So this is a colon cancer study. There has been another paper that is out that looked at different methodologies than this to try to increase sensitivity, and potentially that was better. But again, it wasn't done with this prospective trial like this one was done. So this is something that's coming in the future, although it's certainly not there yet. So the question then is, with the first patient, what test should be done? And this is the statement that's been published all over in GI, which is really the best test is the one that gets done. So I believe colonoscopy is the best test. It's the most sensitive. It's the most specific. It has the least, it's probably one of the safest. In terms of what we do, but if you can't get your patient to do this, certainly any of the other ones, whether it's even, I didn't talk about sigmoidoscopy, but even sigmoidoscopy or occult blood tests, if that's the only thing they'll do, is better than doing this. They're doing nothing. Okay?